From Grantham to Phillipsburg, Saxonburg to Shamokin, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Russia is now using its oil and natural gas as a weapon against nations supporting Ukraine in its efforts to fight off the brutal Russian invasion. Could Pennsylvania natural gas take the place of Russian natural gas? David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capitol Watch discussion. And Republican candidates for U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania are embracing President Trump. Democratic candidates are ignoring Joe Biden. I'll explain why on my town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Among the actions that undermined voter confidence in the outcome of the 2020 elections was the use of private funds from outside groups giving so-called grants to selected counties, almost all of them with substantial Democratic registration majorities. State Senator David Argall estimates more than $22 million was funneled into Pennsylvania counties. Argall says emails recently were reported to the Senate State Government Committee showing a concerted effort between the office of Democratic Governor Tom Wolf and left-wing lobbyists with ties to dark money groups guiding those grants. Senators Kristen Phillips Hill and Lisa Baker have introduced legislation to ban the use of such money in the future because they say, quote, "Dark money being funneled into our election system raises the specter of shadowy actors with big pocketbooks exerting their influence." Owners of coal-fired power plants and coal mines, along with affected labor unions, have filed suit in Commonwealth Court seeking to block implementation of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, better known as REGGIE, saying the regulations are, quote, patently unlawful. The new suit joins efforts by lawmakers to overturn REGGIE in court, as the regulations are a de facto carbon tax, and taxes can only be imposed by legislative action. A majority of legislators voted to kill the regulations, but their action was vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, who is determined to implement REGGIE, despite the fact it will eliminate thousands of high-paying labor union jobs and dramatically increase residential electric bills. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation and AFSCME have been sued by a union worker alleging sexism and self-dealing in violation of union rules. The Center Square reports Mindy McFetridge, who works in Venango County, is suing, alleging, quote, "a deliberate and unexplained failure to uphold and enforce seniority rights." She says she was laid off while men with less seniority who were members of the union's executive board, along with friends and relatives of the local president, were allowed to continue working. McFetridge is being represented by the Fairness Center in her suit against PennDOT and AFSCME. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Russia has essentially cut off the flow of natural gas to Poland and Romania and is poised to further use the resource to punish those nations coming to the aid of Ukraine. Increased Pennsylvania natural gas production could fill that void. Here to talk about it is our Capitol Watch crew, David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, who is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here as always, David. Thank you.
Outstanding. Great to see you. And joining us via the telephone, our pal Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, how are you, sir?
I am great. Delighted to be here.
Excellent. 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 Well, we're going to try to cover the waterfront with a bunch of different things that are happening. But, you know, first, not to belabor the point, because I know that the listeners have heard this from us repeatedly, but this is such a critical matter that, you know, it warrants discussion. That, as we've said before, that energy production is critical to not only a nation's economy, but also it's an expression of national power. And as the war continues in Europe with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that Russia, which has entangled the powers of Europe with energy relationships to make them dependent and therefore easier for the Kremlin to control, well, that the Russians have announced that they are cutting off natural gas to Poland and Romania, and further threatening other nations that are engaged with helping the Ukrainians to resist. And so, you know, when we have in the U.S. and especially in Pennsylvania, these massive, massive reserves of natural gas and the other petrochemicals that come along with that, this is the time for the United States to mobilize those energy resources as an instrument of national strength so that we can back up our allies in Europe and help to, you know, help them to keep the lights on as they're getting smacked around by Vladimir Putin. It's just, it's so obvious that it's really distressing that the Biden administration, you know, continues to work to suppress domestic energy production, works to suppress the build out of domestic energy infrastructure.
Well, you're right, David. From what I understand, the EU relies on Russian natural gas resources to the tune of 40%. It really makes them vulnerable to actions like this from Putin, which is really hindering, you know, their ability to function right now. In fact, I was pretty shocked. Just recently, the EU urged its citizens to reduce energy use to the tune of, you know, bicycling to work, telecommuting if they want, turning their thermostats down, reducing their energy use is a real call to action by the United States in particular, because we have a responsibility to our allies in Europe. And I think you're right. We need to do more to make sure that we're backing them up.
The Germans are in an especially bad situation because they're dependent on the Russians for natural gas, and moreover, that their manufacturing economy, and obviously Germany is a major manufacturing power, that their manufacturing sector is competitive primarily because they are powered on cheap natural gas that they buy from Russia. So if the Russians cut off the Germans, then you have the German manufacturing sector impaired. And then that, of course, has a cascade effect across the entire economy. But it's, you know, a pro-production, pro-deployment consensus in the U.S. really needs to be manifest, because not only would this is this an expression of national power, you know, with the U.S. helping our allies in Europe and other places, and to help to disentangle them from these compromising energy relationships with other powers, it's also great business for us that this is a way to power our economy, to bring prosperity to all the different regions of the Commonwealth with the industrial activity of harvesting the energy, building out the infrastructure. And it just, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't have an LNG export terminal on the Delaware River.
Exactly.
There's no reason why that shouldn't be so.
And we develop those energy resources here under the strictest environmental regulations.
Correct.
As opposed to Russia, where, you know, that isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah. I mean, you have them, the Russians, well, you know, and Steve, you've heard me tell this joke before. I mean, with the way that the Russians completely disregard the environment, that they're despoiling sensitive habitat in the Arctic, you know, the caribou and the whales and the, you know, the seals. It's just, it's appalling. And that the, you know, when the Boston environmentalists would rather have a tanker of LNG from Russia, you know, that they'd rather pay Vladimir Putin to kill baby seals than to allow a pipeline a couple hundred miles from Pennsylvania. It's obscene.
And now, never before has it been so clear the damage, the vulnerability countries create for themselves when they fail to develop their energy infrastructure.
Yep.
They become dependent on on the places that are at least acknowledging that, hey, there is power and there is an opportunity that comes along with developing natural resources. And if you don't do that, you make yourself subservient to those that do.
Correct.
As Rebecca correctly pointed out, in the United States, we develop our resources to the highest standards. We have intensely strict environmental laws, federal and at the state level as well. And we've seen the potential here in Pennsylvania, but we're at a crossroads. If we do not continue to build out that critical infrastructure, of course, we have the natural gas. It's under our Pennsylvania soil and can be accessed in an environmentally clean and friendly way that barely disrupts the surface.
Yes.
But at the same time, if we don't do that, we lose out on all the opportunities that come with it and put ourselves in a subservient place. So we need the pipelines. We need the midstream facilities. We need the actual drilling itself to be taking place.
Right.
Again, all properly supervised under strict environmental regulations.
Yes.
But that puts us in a place to not only protect Pennsylvania and not only protect the United States security, but really to bring security to the world and not let bullies like Putin ultimately oppress neighboring countries who were short-sighted and didn't think it was essential to develop their own energy infrastructure.
You know, if we had a pro-production governor, this would all be different. But when, you know, Tom Wolf comes in and the very first thing he says is we're going to deploy a new extra industry-specific tax on natural gas production, it inhibits investment. People don't want to take the risk of putting their money in Pennsylvania because they don't know, you know, what's going to happen. Pennsylvania needs to act like we want the investment and the production and the jobs, because if we don't, there are lots of other places for that investment to go.
The opportunity has never been greater, too. In Europe, they're building LNG terminals looking for imports now.
Yeah, yeah.
They're working on that. So if we build that LNG terminal on the Delaware, there will be customers for that natural gas.
The best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is today. So, yes, if it's going to take 3 to 5 years to build these things, let's expedite. Let's get started. Let's get her done. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation. Well, we've had an exceptionally active week in the General Assembly, and that the Pennsylvania House of Representatives has approved, I would point to two really landmark pieces of legislation that, on the one hand, that the House approved pro-growth business relief by lowering the corporate net income tax, a full point in the first year and another full point in the second year, if in that second year we meet certain revenue targets.
And we've talked about the CNI, the corporate net income tax, and these what the impact of the high taxes of Pennsylvania has on our ability to compete with other states for investment here in Pennsylvania and job creation here in Pennsylvania. It was very heartening to see a huge bipartisan majority pass the CNI reduction bill in the House this week, and now that's on its way to the Senate for consideration and then hopefully to Governor Wolf for signature.
Yes.
But this is important because it's such an important issue that even Democrats voted to cut taxes, which is unusual.
Which is, and again, and it's tax rates.
But it's a good
sign. Not tax collections, right. It's tax rates. And when the rate is too high and it suffocates growth, the Commonwealth doesn't get the collections that it would get from a lower rate with a growing economy. And so, yes, I do hope that this is a new dawn for a bipartisan consensus about more positive business conditions.
And certainly, if you listen to the debate on the House floor, there was a lot of talk about the dynamic modeling. What would happen if these rates are reduced,
mm-hmm.
even modestly,
yeah.
so we become more competitive with other states, on par with other states, we will start to see the benefits of growth. More revenue will come in ultimately. With lower tax rates, people will be more prosperous, more jobs, more opportunities. That's the Pennsylvania we're looking for.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So, again, this goes on to the Senate now for further consideration, and probably it'll be wrapped into the Pennsylvania state budget, the general fund budget that has to be concluded by the end of the fiscal year on June 30. But certainly that the House has put down its marker as to where it stands on that, and especially, as you said, Steve, with such an overwhelming bipartisan vote. But the other matter that I think really deserves a deep dive is a much closer run thing that just happened, that the Pennsylvania House approved the Lifeline Scholarship Program for Pennsylvania kids. Steve, tell us about this, how it went down, and why it's so important.
Well, Pennsylvania has an education system that is unfortunately failing many students, not all students. Some students are able to go to good schools and get a good education in Pennsylvania. Many students are. But there are many students who are left behind simply because of the zip code of the neighborhood they happen to live in.
Right.
And so we are losing the opportunity for children to get a good education, not by any fault of the families or the children, but simply because they're assigned to a poorly performing school, often a chronically poorly performing school.
Right.
So the Lifeline Scholarship Program is an educational opportunity account. What it does is set aside a piece of the funding that a school district would normally get, just a piece of it, though, not the whole thing. Actually, the state component, and the funding comes through not only state, but it comes through federal and local taxation. So there's normally three components of the funding.
Yes.
The state piece, which is about $6,700 per student, under the educational opportunity account within the Lifeline Scholarship, allows a student who is stuck in a poorly performing school in the bottom 15% of schools in Pennsylvania in terms of performance. A student in one of those schools can now take the state share of their funding and use it for an alternative educational setting that would allow them the opportunity to thrive, whether that be a private school, parochial school, or other option. That student is now free to take resources from the school they were attending to use in a more productive way for that child, while still leaving that school with the lion's share of the funding that would have accompanied that child.
Right.
And now fewer students to educate, so a better faculty-to-staff ratio, a faculty-to-student ratio in that school as well, which will lead to that school improving. It's an exciting day in Pennsylvania. It's the first time an educational opportunity account has passed out of the House of Representatives. It's now on its way to the Senate for consideration. And again, ultimately, this will probably be something worked out with the Wolf administration around the budget negotiations coming up in June. But a huge banner day for educational choice, educational opportunity in Pennsylvania, educational pluralism in Pennsylvania,
right,
because we know that one size does not fit all when it
Correct.
Comes to education. This gives families opportunities to tailor the education to the needs of their child, and it's targeting those students who, again, by no fault of their own, happen to be forced to attend currently a district school that simply does not perform.
Each kid deserves a rigorous and meaningful educational experience that helps to prepare that kid for success in life, including, of course, you know, success in the workplace. That's one of the reasons why our organization and other business groups have long supported education reform, competition, charter schools, school choice, all these things, so that families and students have more choices and hopefully will get that kind of personalized experience, that kind of learning environment that is most effective, most meaningful for that particular student.
And competition is a key word, and you mentioned that, and that is really at the root of educational choice, because competition makes everybody better. Everyone has to strive to do better. That creates a healthy, beneficial improvement in the institutions that are out there trying to educate our children, offering to educate our children. And just like with tax rates, we don't operate in a vacuum here in Pennsylvania. When other states are doing this, are enacting EOAs and other forms of flexibility for families to be able to tailor the education to their child's needs, that creates a competition for what are the better places to settle down and live and raise your family.
Right.
West Virginia has an EOA program, a universal EOA. Any number of states like Florida, Arizona, and many other of the very fast-growing popular states have EOAs. So for Pennsylvania to begin to go down this road to start having the educational opportunity accounts for our kids as well,
right,
to be better educated, that's going to also lure families to stay here in our state, to move here.
Right.
So it's benefiting our whole workforce and our whole economy at the same time as the lives of these particular kids who take the EOA and now can get an opportunity for hope, an opportunity to a lifeline, so they're not trapped in a failing school.
I think this would also be especially important for Pennsylvania's cities, including our smaller cities that have had public school systems that are viewed, by the citizenry as underperforming, to say, well, I wouldn't want my kid to go to that school. Therefore, I've got to move out of the city, in order to, continue my life and career, build my family, because I wouldn't want my child in that public school in that city. Like, to give those parents more educational choices for their kids, like, wouldn't that increase the chance that those folks, if they liked the city, that they might continue to live there?
And exactly, and that kind of opportunity, it's important to note, also is all coming in a revenue neutral way. This is not increase. It's not, the EOA does not require any new spending, mm-hmm. and it does not require any tax increases. It's simply using a component of the existing per child funding that goes to all public schools in Pennsylvania and allowing the portability of that, so that students can seek the opportunity they need, and they don't have to move away from a city.
Yes.
They can still reside close to their friends and families and relatives that they like to be around, and the businesses they like to patronize, and the institutions they're a part of. So this allows for, again, it just simply allows for a better educational experience for those Pennsylvania families who don't fit in the cookie-cutter mold of the traditional district schools.
Yeah. Well, and Steve, I know that you and all of our friends at Commonwealth Foundation have been fighting for kids and educational flexibility and choice and these kinds of lifelines for students for a long, long time. So congratulations to you and the whole CF team.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your support as well.
Well, absolutely, and sadly, we're coming down to the last of our time here. So, again, thanks to all the listeners for being with us. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
Absolutely. They can find us at pmta.org.
Wonderful. And, Steve, where can folks learn more about you and the good work that you guys do at Commonwealth Foundation?
Our website is commonwealthfoundation.org.
Can't beat that. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Along with the Grand Canyon-sized chasm in how they view the role of government and approach the issues dominating the campaign, the two-party field of candidates for U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania also differ widely in their approach to the dominant political figures in their respective parties. On the Republican side, a sort of primary within a primary is being waged as all of the candidates seek to bask in the still dominant aura of former President Donald Trump. Dr. Mehmet Oz would seem to have won that contest, having received President Trump's official endorsement, but that has not stopped the other candidates from emphasizing their Trump bona fides. All claim to be heir of MAGA, Make America Great Again, regardless of whom the Pied Piper of MAGA has endorsed. MAGA is, however, an idea popularized by a person. On those rare occasions when the candidates set aside personal attacks and actually talk about policy, there is remarkable unanimity on the key issues that animate a Republican primary. All are pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-energy, pro-protecting the border, and are carbon copies of each other on virtually every issue. As a result, residency, how long or whether certain candidates are actually Pennsylvanians, has become the most divisive factor. The Democratic race could not be more different. Joe Biden? Crickets. Tom Wolf? Crickets. Nobody is racing to associate themselves with the two-party leaders who polls show are deeply unpopular, even with voters in their own party. A Quinnipiac poll conducted in mid-April found just 35% of respondents approved of the job being done by President Biden, with 55% disapproving. On the direction of the country, the Real Clear Politics average of polling finds 64.6% see the nation headed in the wrong direction, 28% think we are on the right track. Likewise, at the state level, the most recent Franklin and Marshall poll found 59% of Pennsylvanians see the Commonwealth as being on the wrong track, with 30% thinking we are headed in the right direction. Only 8% of those surveyed in the April poll say Governor Tom Wolf is doing an excellent job as governor, while 34% say he's doing a poor job. Wolf's incompetent handling of the COVID-19 pandemic was fatal to many businesses and to an obscene number of nursing and personal care home residents. The Biden administration is a dumpster fire, with inflation running at a 40-year high and the bungling of foreign affairs, from the chaotic retreat from Afghanistan to his tepid response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Against this backdrop, it is easy to understand why the Democrat candidates are staying as far away from Wolf and Biden as possible. They can do that during the primary, but the central theme of the GOP's general election campaign will obviously be to tie the winner to the unpopular leaders of their own party. The Democratic primary has basically boiled down to a two-person race between Wolf's Lieutenant Governor, John Fetterman, and Pittsburgh area Congressman Connor Lamb. The two could not be more different in style. Wags refer to the race as the hoodie versus the blue blazer, and there are more distinct differences in their approach to policy than is evident in the Republican race. Lamb has crafted an image, not necessarily accurate, as being more of a moderate. He eschews the toxic rhetoric of the left, attempting to be portrayed as the more reasonable voice in the race. That would be an asset in the general election, but primaries are all about appealing to the base in a way that won't offend the ever-shrinking middle. At that, Lamb appears not to have succeeded. Fetterman is an unabashed socialist. Should he be elected to the U.S. Senate, he will make Bernie Sanders look like a Ted Cruz conservative. Fetterman aggressively campaigns for a far-left agenda, fully bought into the Green New Deal, which is largely responsible for the nation's current economic woes. Even if he wanted to, Lamb could not move to the left of Fetterman without falling off the edge of the planet. While polling shows a GOP race with a large segment of undecided voters and no clear frontrunner, Fetterman has opened up a large lead in the Democratic primary. He also enjoys a substantial fundraising advantage, which will make it difficult for Lamb to catch up in the waning days of the primary campaign. The end result of all these primary skirmishes will be the nomination of two individuals who will differ substantially in both style and substance. As voters in Penns Woods decide who will succeed Pat Toomey in the U.S. Senate, they will undoubtedly be offered a clear choice. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPDC-AM in Elizabethtown, WIOV-FM in Ephrata, along with WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.